Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for Debtwire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Climate Calamities. Joining me is our special guest, Adam Smith, applied climatologist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, better known as NOAA, as well as one of our great journalists, Kunal Kamal. Kunal, welcome back to the podcast.
Always good to be back, Paul.
And Adam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and Happy New Year to both of you guys. This is our first podcast of the year, and we want to use today's podcast to discuss the annual report NOAA completed on billion-dollar disasters during calendar year 2023 that was released last week. But first, Adam, can you tell us a little bit about your background and your current role as an applied climatologist with NOAA?
Yes, I am the lead scientist for more than a decade for the U.S. billion-dollar weather and climate disaster research portfolio. And I collaborate with many national, international, and other industry sector partners to perform different types of research to integrate different forms of public and private sector data sources into better quality controlled disaster cost frameworks as research tools. So a lot of this research is produced in different reports, different forum, and also is briefed to different interagency groups that are looking at similar research questions. So it is a collaborative effort across many different stakeholders and partners.
Thanks, Adam. We have a great fascination for the work you and your team do. So to begin with, can you provide a brief overview of this year's report and how it compares to previous years?
Yes. So in 2023, it was another costly year of disasters and extremes across much of the United States. In fact, there were 28 separate weather or climate disaster events, each costing at least $1 billion. These included one winter storm cold wave event across the Northeast, February of 2023, of course, the tragic wildfire that impacted Maui Island, the drought and heat wave across much of the central and southern U.S., which was in fact the most costly of the events last year at $14.5 billion, a lot of agricultural impacts there. We had four flooding events from California to Florida, to the Northeast, to the East Coast storm that happened in late December last year. Also, two tornado outbreaks, two hurricane events, and finally, 17 severe storm events, including hail and high wind from across many different parts of the country. These 28 events, in fact, surpassed the previous record year of 2020, that had 22 separate billion-dollar events. In aggregate, it was about $93 billion in damage, and it was just another year that we have to better prepare for in the future.
All right. Have you identified any emerging trends or shifts in types of climate-related events? Are some events happening at an increased frequency?
Yes, there have been a number of drivers that have been quite pronounced in the last several years, even the last several decades. Just speaking more broadly, the West Coast is more prone to drought events and heat wave events. You know, since the year 2000, California's had many exceptional drought events and also goes through a kind of a hydrologic whiplash, which we saw at the beginning of 2023 from drought to the atmospheric rivers. Also, these drought events can make wildfire seasons longer, more damaging, and more destructive, like we've seen in California and other western states in recent years. But then in the central and eastern portions of the country, we have more heavy rainfall events, more flooding events, whether it's an urban flood or a kind of a long duration seasonal type flood. Those type of trends are not going in the right direction in terms of frequency and cost. Other examples might be that, you know, of course, we have warmer sea surface temperatures, which can add to the amplification potential for hurricanes, like in 2018, with a hurricane going from a tropical storm to a Category 5, Hurricane Michael, hitting the panhandle of Florida. So these type of trends do make it more challenging to prepare and evacuate ahead of events.
Just before we move ahead with regional impact and all that, I just wanted to understand how this data is collected. What is the criteria used to determine the financial impact of each disaster, especially considering the range of events? And also, given the ongoing debate over the validity of ESG criteria itself, what do you think is the relevance of research like this?
Yeah, so to do this type of research, of course, requires a broad range of public and private sector data partners, data sources to capture a range of impacts. So we have 12 different partners, including the National Weather Service, FEMA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, National Interagency Wildfire Center, even partners like U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, individual state emergency management agencies, but of course, the property insurance and reinsurance partners as well are among key players that provide about 16 different types of asset classes we're trying to capture. So we're trying to capture what we call total direct losses, including physical damage to homes, to businesses, to municipal buildings like schools. Of course, infrastructure like roads, bridges, levee systems, electrical grids, even time element losses like business interruption or loss of living quarters when you're out of your home whilst being repaired or rebuilt. But of course, even damage to vehicles, to boats, and agriculture, you know, crops and livestock feeding costs go up or are, you know, impacted certainly with drought and heat. And wildfire suppression costs, particularly in the West, are another factor that we capture. So, you know, each of these disasters is a different mix of public and private sector funding, and different asset classes are impacted. But I need to also mention that we do not capture losses to things like natural capital or environmental degradation. The mental or physical healthcare related costs, those are not captured. And kind of the supply chain ripple effects outside of a hazard region, some people might call that contingent business interruption costs, those also are not captured. So our estimate should be considered conservative with respect to what is truly lost, but cannot be completely measured due to lack of consistently available data.
Okay, that makes sense. Were there any specific regions that bore a disproportionate impact in terms of severe weather events and occurrence of these billion-dollar disasters?
Yes, in 2023, many central and southern states were impacted at a higher cost and a frequency than many of the other regions around the nation. And actually, if you look back to 1980, over the last 44 years, it's really the South, the Central, and the Southeast regions of the U.S. that have been impacted quite heavily. The states that have the highest cumulative impact from 1980 through 2023 would be Texas, Florida, and Louisiana. Texas is about $402 billion, Florida is $389 billion, and Louisiana is $304 billion. But it's important to note that then, based on what I just said, the relative costs are most acute in Louisiana because, of course, its population, its economic size is much smaller than either Texas or Florida, but it proportionally has, you know, a high level of impact from floods, severe storms, hurricanes. You know, it gets a lot of different hazards.
Adam, you had already mentioned that there's been, or at least during 2023, there were $28 billion disaster events, approximately $93 billion in cost. So how does this financial burden affect government budgets, and what strategies are available to manage these costs? And the third part of that question would be, how can municipalities develop a strong resiliency infrastructure to try to combat these situations?
I would say that one silver lining from all these different extremes and disasters that have impacted different parts of our nation, whether it was last year or the last several years, are that the impacts are actually opportunities to see where any location is either vulnerable or perhaps even already resilient to certain impacts from these different extremes. No disaster event is really the same as far as how they hit, as far as their impact, their duration, their intensity, and then, of course, how a region is either prepared or not prepared for those impacts. So learning from what has happened in the past to better prepare for the future, I think, is the key. But that's easier said than done. Certainly, if a county or city is economically healthier before a disaster, they tend to bounce back more quickly in the months and years after a disaster than a location that is already losing considerable population and tax base and economic vitality. So, you know, certainly a city's tax base gives it more flexibility in seeing different types of adaptations or mitigations they could do to enhance their future, protect their future from different extremes. And also another positive I would say is that in the last 2 to 3 years, there have been lots of public and private sector platforms, many of them free, that have been developed to better identify at a very fine scale what different types of hazards and extremes a region or a location has faced in the past, because likely that's what they'll also see in the future. And from that, you can look at different socioeconomic vulnerabilities or exposures and really get a sense for kind of as a checkup on where you live and what could be done to better enhance your protections in the future.
Typically, what's the post-disaster recovery period for such events?
It really depends on the intensity, the duration, and the kind of the economic health and vitality of a region before it gets impacted. You know, it could be months to several years, or even theoretically out to a decade, depending on how impactful it is. One newer thing we are seeing in recent years is what I like to call a compound disaster, which is just another way of saying that a hazard or disaster event has happened in a tight space-time frequency. In fact, over the last 7 years, since the year 2017, the United States has been impacted by 137 separate billion-dollar disasters that have cumulatively cost greater than $1 trillion in damage. So really 2017 to 2023 has been quite an anomalous era for these different weather and climate extremes. And also it's the fourth year in a row that the United States has had 18 or more of these billion-dollar disasters somewhere around the nation. So what that means is that there are shorter time intervals often for different areas between disasters, which can mean less time and resources available to respond, to recover, and prepare for future events. So a lot of this data that we're putting out there, and ours is just really one tool in the toolbox, seeks to help provide perspective and understanding on what's happened, because likely, again, it might happen again in the future.
In terms of recovery, is it more difficult in less populated areas due to higher per capita cost, or how does that work?
Yes, we see that areas that are perhaps more rural that have really been impacted by an intense event, certainly the per capita cost would be higher there. And hopefully they would have, you know, reasonable property insurance to help recover. But if they don't, then of course, FEMA often steps in to provide short or medium term recovery assistance. But of course, FEMA can't be everywhere forever. So they will move on to the next disaster. And then, of course, it's up to the local, the city, the county. Perhaps the state can step in and provide some assistance to try to get the location back, at least partially, to where it was before disaster. And, you know, we've seen different parts of the country. Louisiana in 2020 and 2021 had five or six different hurricanes just back to back to back to back. Or Florida in the last few years in 2021, 2022, several impactful hurricanes. And even California, you know, we went from multi-year drought to this really catastrophic wildfire seasons and 2017, 2018, 2020, 2021, I believe. And then, you know, this compound disaster creates cascading impacts where basically the cumulative effect of compound disasters is worse than if they were more separated across time. So, and we, in fact, are seeing how, you know, the property insurance industry is in some of these areas has been pulling back because just of the frequency and the intensity of these extremes.
So I'm glad you mentioned the property insurers because, you know, we've been covering situations in places like California where the property and car insurers are pulling back. But are there other regions of the country? Because what first comes to my mind are places like California, Louisiana, and Florida. But are there other regions where this whole issue with property and car insurance could grow into a bigger issue?
I think that those states in particular, California, Louisiana, Florida, are where we've seen the events kind of materialize into property insurance being more reluctant basically to underwrite risk. So certainly, you know, the Gulf Coast is naturally prone to hurricanes with the Gulf of Mexico and the warming sea surface temperatures. Much of the country is at risk for a variety of hazards. It's not really any one hazard. It's usually a basket of different types of hazards. So I think that you know, what the last 7 years in particular has shown much of the country is that, you know, we're likely at risk for some combination of hazards. And to understand what those are, it's an education component. And at the local level, you know, at the property level, at the family level, at the community level, to, you know, try to make proactive decisions so that you're not constantly reacting to these extremes, which you know will continue to happen in the future.
Have you seen any correlation between increasing disasters and changes in budget allocations in terms of from governments, whether it's on the state or local level?
I haven't actually followed that data close enough to really provide any insight, but I think that it's an important question, and perhaps I do need to actually look at that a little bit more closely. Certainly, I'm sure there are some pretty clear connections for certain regions that have really been bombarded in recent years from different disasters. I would say one thing that is challenging is if a region is, whether it's a city, a county, multi-county region, is kind of economically distressed, it makes it more difficult to plan future types of, you know, mitigation spending, because then where is that going to come from? Are you going to be sacrificing the present for the future? And so it's a, you know, kind of a situation where the funding for these different systems, how can that be done if the tax base and the property base is being eroded while the risk is either staying the same or increasing?
These events obviously do impact a lot of infrastructure, right? So is there any financial impact in the long term for transit agencies or toll road companies which operate these infrastructure, right? Do they bear a part of this cost when we see a $1 billion disaster occur? How much this will have an impact for a transit agency, or say if a road collapses or a bridge collapses, how frequent are these events, and is this area of concern?
Yeah, it's typically heavy rain, flood events, mud flow, debris flow type events that we've seen in California, Colorado, other parts of the country that, you know, can certainly heavily damage transportation infrastructure, whether it's roads, bridges, levee systems, even dams, like in California, some dams have failed in the past. So in aggregate, those are typically smaller pieces of the total disaster cost puzzle as far as an asset class. But when they do fail, of course, they can have long-term impacts. They're challenging to rebuild in a timely manner. So I think that one upshot I'd like to highlight is the fact that much of our nation's infrastructure was designed and built during the 20th century when we had a more stable climate. But now much of that infrastructure exists in a 21st century climate in which there's more energy in the atmosphere, more energy in the oceans, which can play into these enhancing some of these extreme events that turn into billion-dollar disasters. So the faster we can close the delta between the 20th century infrastructure that still we rely on with different standards that exists in a 21st century climate with more intense rainfall, more intense heat, or frequent storms, when we close that delta, we'll get our handle on better mitigating future risk and the cost will come down, hopefully.
And Adam, a couple of closing questions. One is, when from your research did we start seeing more frequent and intense climate and weather disasters? I mean, is 2017 a demarcation point, or what point was that when we started seeing things change?
Yes, I would say 2017 was really the year that really things started to become more impactful. And I think 5 out of the last 7 years, we've had $100 billion or more in damage from these billion-dollar disasters. Prior to 2017, 2011 was a big year, 2012 was a big year, but they were more isolated, more buffered. Now we're having big years in terms of frequency, cost, and diversity of these events much more consistently. And yes, that we do have certainly more exposure, more vulnerability, and climate change is enhancing or even supercharging some of these extremes that leads to billion-dollar disasters. So clearly, our work is cut out for us, but I think that it's becoming increasingly clear what the challenges are. And I think that one of the key issues is how to get it done in what order.
And finally, with, you know, the property and car insurance companies, is there an increasing level of concern from them about what's going on with climate, or is it something they're just monitoring, or what's your sense in terms of the feedback you're getting from that part of the community?
Yeah, I think that certainly certain parts of Florida, Louisiana, California, as we've seen after disasters, dozens of different smaller to medium-sized property insurance companies have failed. You know, they've gone into bankruptcy. And, you know, that is a signal to a marketplace that, you know, that risk is challenging at the time or maybe changing. But, you know, a lot of these extremes are stochastic and random, but we are starting to see more patterns in some regions. The upshot is know your region, know your history, figure out what you can do to better prepare for your future. And it's a kind of a rising tide that lifts all boats in a positive sense.
Well, Adam, thank you for sharing your work and your insights and what you're doing at NOAA. So now, thank you for participating as well. And we plan on continuing to build on our understanding of the implications of weather and climate risk on municipal bonds and strategies for navigating these challenges. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking and or sharing our podcast on social media posts and subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.